To me, the difference between, you know, like a $3 million business right now, 15 to 20% profit, and a $20 million one doing 10% profit is not much difference in your quality of life. So there is, in my opinion, like a point of diminishing returns. And I think like if you're a solopreneur, that's around $1.5 million revenue. If you've got a couple partners or, you know, like 50% revenue, then that's around $3 million. You can do the math from there. That's a good life. That's a really good life.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Today is going to be a bit fun. We have someone who has an amazing company, has kind of, as I always say, the overnight success, even though he's been having success for a few years, but years and years in the making. But even cooler, we found we were both Gamecocks and we've been in the Dynamite Circle, which is this really cool business group years ago. And we knew some very interesting people in common. All right, everyone, I think you're going to enjoy this conversation a lot. Eric Bandholz of Beer Brand, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
What is going on, AJ?
You got some energy.
Wait, yeah, that's you gotta bring it, man. Everyone's going to be learning some knowledge.
Oh, no.
Today.
No, okay. You know, I'm feeling like I should be heading down to group therapy about now.
Yeah. Is that place still open?
I heard someone was down there and I was like, oh my God. I miss that place. That was the best of 5 points in Colombia. Yeah. Looking at your background, you know, you've built Beer Brand into this really fast growing, and there's been, you know, over the years, some really cool male facial, you know, brands, and I don't know what you call them, but your focus on beards and then sort of just how you guys have continuously grown, built a really successful company. Where do you see yourself as an entrepreneur these days?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. So for those who don't know, Beard Brand, we were established in 2012. So we're going on our 12th year. We're an entirely bootstrap business. So it's just me and my two business partners who own the company. We've got no debt other than, like, you know, whatever we put on our credit card for the month, and then no outside investors. So building Beard Brand has always been about our core values, which is freedom, hunger, and trust. So how do we build a business that allows us to do the things that we want in life? For those who don't know, Dynamite Circle is kind of like this mindset of like building a location independent kind of lifestyle, like a business of your own terms. And it's been a really great community to connect with those like-minded people. And, you know, we've kind of built Beard Brand that way. So it's more of a quote unquote lifestyle business than like a unicorn business or growth at all costs or, you know, whatever buzzwords are given to the companies in D2C. So for us, it's been about like, how do we enjoy the journey? How do we make it so that every single day we show up into the business and we enjoy the business and we enjoy working with our team members and we enjoy producing the products that we produce and we enjoy working with our vendors. And I think a lot of times people chase the top line and the growth. And, you know, obviously this podcast is like that aspirational eight figures, but not understanding that the actual aspiration, in my opinion, is the here, the now, the today. And when you can focus on building the today and what I'm doing in this moment, and it doesn't really matter where you end up. What matters is that you're enjoying the journey.
So much of being an entrepreneur allows you to develop the concepts of not just how you live, but the type of work you do, the type of things you build towards, and the people you work with. Given that we were just chatting and you were in Dynamite Circle early, and we won't just use that as a reference point of the thing. Was this type of direction to create this business that would have the lifestyle you wanted while also being hungry for the appropriate type of growth? I'm going to assume that's part of the reference. Was that early or did that develop over time?
Yeah, it certainly was an interesting journey. So I've always known that I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to create my own way. Like freedom before Beard Brand was ever a twinkle in my eye, it was like the number one list and things that I valued in life. So it's like I've always been drawn to entrepreneurship, not for the money making aspect, but for the freedom making aspect. This idea that I don't have a boss, I don't have someone telling me what to do when I clock in, when I clock out, the days that I work, all that stuff. Like I wanted control over myself, really, in the most pure sense that I could have. And, you know, you're always going to have influence, whether it be your employees or your co-founders or your, especially your customers, that will guide and shape you. But at the end of the day, you know, they are your own calls and you get to make the decisions. Do I want to appease my customers or do I just want to do something because I want to do something? And with entrepreneurship, you have that. So I always knew that I wanted to build that kind of business. Now, Beard Brand started off as almost like It was just going to be a side hobby for me and my partners. And then as we got some more traction, then it was like, well, it'll be a full-time thing for me. And then it'll be a side thing for my business partners. And then it kept on growing. And then it was like, all right, well, it's going to be my business partner and I will be our full-time. My third partner never wanted to be in part of the day-to-day. And we knew that going in. So it was like my business partner and I, and we're like within the first year, we hit $1 million run rate. And I was like, all right, we're going to take over the world. Like, so we're like, we're going to put it all into this business and, you know, grow at all costs and like eat ramen and try to just like do great. And what we found is that was not for us. Like, so we ended up getting stressed out. We weren't making any money, you know, and then, you know, what's the worst thing when you're trying to grow at all costs and then the business doesn't grow? Like, that's not a fun time. So we kind of had a coming to Jesus moment with the founders where we met up in, we've always been good about doing like quarterly strategy sessions where we can work on the business rather than in the business. And it was one in Amsterdam. It was actually kind of shortly after Bangkok. I think we did Bangkok and then we did Amsterdam. You know, we're just like, hey, look, the business grew to $3 million of revenue for the three of us. That will give us whatever we want in life. You know, we can travel the world. We can spend time with family. We can have food on the table, a roof over our head. You know, maybe I could have a little bit nicer car, or maybe I could travel in a little bit nicer hotels. But like, to me, the difference between, you know, like a $3 million business printing out 15 to 20% profit and a $20 million one doing 10% profit is not much difference in your quality of life. So there is, in my opinion, like a point of diminishing returns. And I think like if you're a solopreneur, that's around $1.5 million revenue. If you've got a couple of partners or, you know, like 50% revenue, then that's around $3 million. You can do the math from there. But like at $3 million, 50% ownership, making, what did I say? 15%. So that's, what is that? $450K a year, something like that. Like that's a good life. That's a really good life.
And I don't know where you are, kids and all that. If you're single, that's...
Yeah, if you're single, that's really great.
Yeah.
I got two kids and, you know, like certainly, I'm not a big fan of public schools. So, you know, that puts a hurt on the budget a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we did. I moved to Spain after I sold my company. Different whole thing, but like British private schools were a whole different. Being an expat, but making money in America is sort of like the biggest entrepreneurial hack ever. You know?
Yeah. Maybe we could talk a little bit more about this. I'm exploring moving to Denmark, taking my family there and what that
I
might
studied
be.
In Copenhagen.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. Grad school. Yeah. I mean, I did the exchange program over there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, we go there like every summer. I've already bought my plane tickets for this summer. So I've been there four times before. This will be my fifth trip. Just love it there. Like the people are great, the architecture, everything. But, you know, from my perspective, it's like, how do I build a life where I take my kids with me? I mean, if you don't mind me asking, like, how do you take your kids to a different country? How old were your kids when you did that?
So my oldest is now 19 and it's funny enough. We moved back to the States so they could get ready for American universities. And now my oldest is at St. Andrews in Scotland and my next one is going to St. Andrews next year. So it's like, all right, that worked well. But they were middle school. Okay. The two older ones, they're a year apart. I mean, they're a grade apart, 20 months apart. And then my youngest was entering first grade.
Was that a hard transition for them? Or
my son does talk about, like, we took him out of a really good group of kids he had known. You know, we were in Brooklyn and kind of like had jumped through all the hoops for like the specialized public schools and stuff. So he had a group of friends that he had known forever and a day. So he did kind of say it was that. But he very quickly had another group of friends. It's just, it was that, even though he did enjoy it, for the girl, there was sort of like, you know, girls are so much better than guys in any shape or form. It's sort of like they missed their friends, but they had 20,000, you know, new friends within like a day.
Was it like a language immersion? Were they speaking Spanish or?
By law in Spain, and every country is a little different. You can do expat private school, but they have to have a certain amount of Spanish language. My kids all started with 3 days. Yeah, it was 3 days Spanish. After 2 years, they went into the Spanish immersion, which was history and language and culture. So three classes a week taught fully in Spanish. They had, yeah, they weren't fluent, but they were fully operating. Whatever, right below fluent conversational.
Yeah.
So you know, reading, writing, and all that. Every country is a little different how they allow, you know, private schools and expats and, you know, some of the international schools. I think Denmark, you are required to, just because I did look at it years ago, you know, so it was like 7 years ago that we went to Spain, and Denmark was on the list. Just my wife was like, I'm not dealing with the cold. Oh. Like, but it is. Yeah.
How long were you in Spain? How long were the
Just over 5 years.
Okay. So a pretty good chunk of their life.
Yeah. They consider themselves New York Spaniards. Yeah. When they talk about it. Yeah.
Like, culturally, do you feel like that foreign country has rubbed off on them? Do you feel like they're like not quite American like you?
No, they're very, I mean, different. I mean, like, didn't have the Boy Scout experience or some of the smaller things I had. Definitely much different high school until the last 2 years environment. They do consider themselves very much American, and they want to be in America long term. At least I know my son does. I think my daughter just wants to have a fabulous life, which is good. I think what was interesting, I had done a bunch of exchange programs, so I was always going out to different countries. You know, high school, I did Ecuador. I did Budapest in college, and I did Copenhagen in business school. And, you know, I kind of felt like I was seeing small bits while I was doing there. My kids, though, think of themselves and are more natural with other expat kids. There's like an expat bubble. I've heard it from other families, you know, with their kids. And then I also know ones who really work to be local.
Yeah.
And I always feel like you have to make a choice. You know, you either
in
have an international
would
kid.
Would you embrace the local, or do you think the expat is acceptable?
I don't know in Spain. I think it just depends on the country and the thing. Part of it was the educational level. Spain is decent, but it is very much of an old education. You know, they're very much rote without the sort of higher end math type of thing that you see in some of the Asian countries. So it kind of depends. And our kids, like, they both were in sort of gifted talented programs, and we wanted to kind of encourage that, which lent more towards, you know, we saw more of that type of thing in the international. Sorry, I'm leaning back because you're asking me to think. I'm walking away. I'm like, if I ask a question, it's easy to skip my microphone. Yeah, I know. God damn it.
I think this is interesting. I mean, like, to be fair, like, I've done a ton of podcasts. So if you want to learn my, like, business story, it's out there. But this is not stuff I normally talk about, like, schools. And I think that's the important thing of, like, entrepreneurship is, like, what is the life that you're creating? And, like, you are not constrained by the norms of society anymore with entrepreneurship.
I mean, the biggest thing I did notice, and just kind of take it in and then talk about sort of back to the family, is being an expat, depending on the country, does require probably a little bit more. And once again, if depending on how much you make in the world and all that, you probably are having financial structures and legal structures to kind of handle and different things. You know, the move, Spain, you know, there are some countries where the quality of life is great and your ability to see, travel to places where there are other entrepreneurs and then also have a very high quality of life when you're just wherever you are is really great. It's just, you have to make sure you have that right, appropriate visa, tax, XYZ, you know, type of structure. So that takes a little bit of extra, but sort of like, you know, the horrors of if you ever decide to open have a company that does any business in California, you already know you're going to have a horrible life anyway.
There are some days where California. I'm like, do I just want to stop selling to people in New York and California based on all the ridiculous things?
I mean, you got, especially as an e-commerce, the tax collection. But I remember one time, we did a contract with some employee, but I guess we filed it wrong, whatever we did. And California, like, just decided on that we had a locus in California and they wanted all of our taxes to go through California. We were like, we had one person for 2 weeks. What? You didn't sign this document. So therefore, you know, this and that. Thank you, California. Never going to do a bootstrap company in California.
No, I feel
that's
for
besides
all
the point.
I feel for all those people.
Yeah. I think a lot just depends on what you're hoping. I mean, the biggest thing, and this is COVID did hit this, but the travel. Traveling in Europe it's amazing. Yes. Long drives in the US are classic and, you know, great. But being able to fly anywhere in Europe in 2 to 3 hours and for pennies,
yeah,
you know, is relatively pennies compared to the US is amazing. And the train systems work.
Yeah, and just the cities have all that history and they're so unique.
Food, global. Yeah. And I love Copenhagen. And it's, yes, most of my memories are of the amount of beer I drank after class, but still, it is a completely beautiful place.
What things would you, what were the lessons learned from, 5 years of being an expat? So you sold the business. You had no income at that time, or was it just?
I consulted. I had a cannabis business directory. We had done just with the early legalization with another DCer, and we ended up selling that, but it made some money, and then consulting. So really the biggest thing was you had to kind of, depending on how much you wanted to be involved in business, you had to work your schedule a little bit differently. I had certain days that were just open, only for US business. So it would be sort of my afternoon. So my mornings, kind of switch from after work to before work to do errands and workouts and stuff like that. You change your schedule a little bit. You do find sort of the business groups. This was you do kind of lean to ones that have more, a little bit more European, because as much as you go back to the US, you kind of start going from I'll go back every month to every couple of months to I'll go quarterly or every, couple times a year type of situation. But it just depends on you and your business.
Do you find European entrepreneurs are different mindset than American entrepreneurs?
Same, but different. And once again, some of my favorite entrepreneurs are, they tend to be a little more serious about their business, especially in when you have sort of grown up location independent businesses, that step up. I know a lot of guys from DC or similar things that started off with glorified lifestyle businesses, but they grew up, and not that they're serious 80 hours a week, because most of them have very good flexible lives, but they just, when that transition, especially around parenting, kind of as their kids kind of got a little bit older or whatever, they got so much more serious, and they really treated their business a lot more serious than I see sometimes similar size American entrepreneurs. But we tend to do more, or we strive for more.
As a person who likes to travel the world and, be immersed in different cultures, it allows me to kind of appreciate what Americans have that are unique to the world. And I do think Americans are exceptional at business. I think the competitive nature of our market, the amount of competitors we have, also the ease of getting into business, and the culture around failure, being able to make mistakes, is just this beautiful, beautiful thing that until you leave America, you don't understand how great it is. You just start a business and you start selling stuff and you just go.
Just make it work. I think, what you see is much, if you want to say it this way, much less entrepreneurs per capita, when you're abroad. And if you're finding someone who's local and is focused on the local market, very, very traditional, it's when you find people who are, in a sense, copying American style that it becomes really interesting. I think it's even just the whole, I used to joke New York City was this whole concept that you could be from anywhere in the world, and if you could flip off and curse out a taxi driver, welcome, you're a New Yorker. That's all you need. It's a little changed over the years. There's less of that. But still, I think Americans with entrepreneurs, and it's just we can. I don't think anyone, most Americans I just have to make it work. There's not that very special.
Yeah, so or, you know, mindset. Like in India, I feel there's a lot of red tape. So it's who do you know? Also the regulatory burden in Europe and all that stuff. But I also think there's a little bit of culture of safety. It's just I got my job. I got my paycheck. Things are nice. There's not that same hunger.
It is. And it's also the type of businesses you can grow before you have to sort of adapt to sort of the legal structure. Europe is having a big issue where there's a lot of high-end jobs that just are going wanting because they can't find the talent, where on the flip side, a lot of young people are not being able to find entry point and are getting lots of contract work because no one wants to hire people. It's going to take 2 to 3 years to train because the legal structure and such, you have year-long unemployment and all sorts of rules and laws of how you have to hire. Even in Spain, even the Christmas presents you have to give people.
What? Really?
You have to give it. Well, depending on the size of the company, it's like a ham plus any type of bonus. You know, Haman, for a very Catholic nation, Haman may be higher than Jesus in Spain. Yeah. Good ham is something they really do worship in Spain. So can be canceled on that one. But yeah, it just depends on the structure. So you can create smaller companies that work off of contractors and global talent. It's when you start structuring to that next level, you know, you're either very small or you're very big.
Yeah.
The middle ground is tough. A lot leave.
Yeah. I mean, at what point is that? So is that like in America, that's kind of like 50 employees. Like once you get to 50 employees, then that EEOC stuff starts coming into play.
Yeah.
Is it around the same size in Europe or is smaller. It just, it's even smaller?
I think it's like 4 or 5 employees.
Oh, shut up, really?
Yeah. I mean, because I first went in, so like I started on to go over there, it was going to be an entrepreneur visa, which meant I had to hire X amount of employees within 2-3 years, something like that. I forget the whole terms. And I got saved because I didn't realize the Spanish bureaucracy. So I'd been cleared by the Madrid office. I didn't realize the province, sort of the state in Spain, also had to sign off on your visa. And Andalusia was a different government, which is Malaga's inside Andalusia, was a different political party than was running Madrid at the time. So like they had slowed down almost everything that was coming through. So there was like a 3-year wait to get basic, you know, visa approved for this type of visa. Ended up with a different visa that caused no problem because I wasn't going to do work in Spain anyway. I didn't really want to. It was just, okay, this allows me to jump through the hoops.
What kind of visa was it?
So I ended up with a non-working visa. So retirement visa, whatever. You just have to show you have more than 25,000
25,000 euros
in your bank account.
Because
at the time, I think the annual, it was something like 50% more than the average, the national salary, which is just now it's just around 20K. I mean, Spain has a very low for such a country that has all these things. It's a very, very low generally, you know, average income in Spain.
But would you pay taxes and get access to their healthcare system and all that? Or is it like,
we could have done that, ended up private. And then wife got a working visa working for a company and did the Beckham. So years ago, David Beckham wouldn't take a transfer to Madrid or Barcelona or whatever because of the taxes were so high for all that. So they created this internationally 6-year program, whatever it is, which is only 20. If your special needs hire, it's only 25% for the first X years. So that way, you know, so they call it the Beckham law because he refused to. I'm like, I'm not going to, they're going to take 80% of my salary. Why would I go or my whatever? Yeah. So, you know, they did that because the US and Spain and different countries have different things. And we are going all over the place instead of me doing, they have a tax treaty with the US. So if you pay taxes in one, you don't have to pay the same taxes in the other. So I just would pay my US taxes and then just sort of hand that over to Spain. And even though in theory, they want you to do the opposite. Yeah. You're in Spain, pay us. And then just because US was so much more straightforward and cost me, you know, you'll see that. I mean, Copenhagen, the Northern Europeans tend to be much more straightforward on a bureaucracy and kind of a thing, straightforward. But tax preparation and sort of the legal representation you needed to do that, because of course you had to have extra layers, was just tons of extra work. Extra fees, lots of extra fees. So it was just easier to do my US and then have that be verified, vice versa. But
I'll have to figure it all out. You know, there's a lot that I've got to learn. And hopefully, you know, like it's a place I can get into. You know, it's like I feel like Spain and Portugal seem like they're a little more open to Americans, whereas Denmark seems like it's a little more protective of.
Well, you look Danish, so you should be fine.
I don't know. Should be. It should be in theory, right?
Yeah. Actually, I'm in all likelihood, you know, with the, because I do know people still there. a lot of law is sort of like, especially in the visa, the expectation is you will take Danish. You'll, you know, they're a little bit more specific around that, like, okay, kind of come in and become, live with us, not kind of live in a separate bubble, which I think is good.
Yeah.
I mean, Danes are some of my, yeah, I had the best, the semester I had there, I loved. I mean, I did not like the winters. As an adult, I would very much say, make sure you're planning
I'll keep
of
my Austin
trips.
House. I'll keep my Austin house.
Yeah.
So we'll come back for the, yeah, for the winters.
Get sun in the winter.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is, it's a great experience. I think a lot of it is just that. I mean, up north, the other country that is pretty good with visas is Netherlands. Mm-hmm. You know, especially for, it's one of the, Netherlands and Spain used to be the best for Americans. Now it's sort of Portugal, Malta, Italy, and then Spain and those, but there's lots of choices. And look, you're in a point, you know, from just, you're going to jump through, you have the ability to jump through their hoops, you know, as an entrepreneur. So I don't think you're going to have a problem. It's just paperwork and bureaucracy, but you can hire people to do a lot of that. You know,
yeah,
which
that's,
I learned
that's
the hard way.
I don't
I
want to mess
done.
With all that. Let's just pay some lawyer and have them figure it out for me.
A fixer. Get a local. I mean, in Spain, it was a local fixer. In Denmark, it'd probably be, yeah, somewhat, because they're so, you know, straightforward. You won't have to worry about some of the side deals I had to cut back in the day. But no, I mean, all right. So you're looking at this now. Maybe just to bring it back to a little bit of you. You're looking at this. Is this your idea? Like, is this, how old are your kids?
Yeah. So my daughter's 10. My boy is, he'll be 4, like in a couple of weeks. So
okay.
My daughter's school is kind of like, she can graduate her, you know, elementary school in about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then there's nothing on the horizon after that. There's not like any set program. So that would be kind of like a nice point where in her life, there's a transition. And the same thing would kind of happen with my son when he turns 6. You kind of enter into elementary school. So it seems like that would be a good time frame to kind of get the family over there. My daughter is very averse to these kind of major changes. So I know it will be incredibly challenging for her. The good news is like we've been going to Denmark, you know, for like I take the whole family and me. So for the past 5 years. So I feel like they're going to be more receptive to it. And I'm open to like, I want to learn the language. Like that's always been one of my goals is like immerse in culture. And
Ul, favor, tak.
Yeah.
Say tak. Those are the 4 words I remember.
And hi, I've got that one nailed. So,
hi.
So, I mean, it's just like, you know, but it is like, I haven't moved. It's crazy to think about. Like I've been in Austin since 2014. We've moved from like apartment to apartment or whatever, but I haven't done like a big major move in a long time. And it just seems like with 2 kids now, a really big undertaking, you know, it just seems like shaking everything up. Like I'm in a fortunate position that I don't have to sell my house if I don't want to, you know, like it's already paid for. So, you know, I think it'd even be easier than some of the moves I've made in the past, but it does still seem, obviously an international move seems even more challenging. Like I would just bring one suitcase over and then start buying stuff in Denmark, I guess.
Yeah. There's IKEA everywhere. I mean, we spend tons of money on IKEA, obviously talk with, you know, people, you know, but I know no one who's regretted it. I know some people who did go back 2 years later, and that was our first expectation. Oh, we'll do this. You know, we'll make a choice at the end of the first year, you know, maybe start planning to come back. And we liked it. I mean, really, it was hard to come back. It was just family, and we thought American universities and all this, you know, so we'll probably end up back in Spain, you know. Once you do it, it just, as long as you have enough of and I think the biggest thing is how you keep your American connection, you know, it does feel like the best of both worlds. Plus, depending on your political structure, you end up being like, everyone's like, what the hell's going on in your country? Yeah. And it's like, I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I don't even vote. So it's just like, you know, I moved to a country, you don't even have to worry about voting anymore. So
yeah, I used to, Carlsberg, the best thing I liked, about it is Carlsberg has this amazing, Christmas beer, in December, and they have, Santa Clauses come in beer trucks driving around the city where they then at midnight, whatever, 16 days before Christmas, whatever it was, the Santa's driving the beer trucks was always really cool because they would stop at all these and give out free Christmas beer.
Really?
Yeah, it was brilliant when you're in grad school. But I just remember how, like, you know, I would interview a CEO at a company and he'd be like, oh, let's go have lunch. And he'd pick like two big, you know, pint glass, yeah, glass of the beer, put it on his thing as he's getting lunch. It was like, I like the way this country thinks.
They like their booze, maybe a little bit more than I do, but it seems pretty ingrained in their culture.
At one point, they were the highest per capita beer drinkers in the world.
Wow.
I mean, they've shrunk as, you know, the past 20 years as they've continued going up, that has come down a bit, which I think is the only way you can. But yeah, it was at one point they were averaging, I always used to be like, what? It was 5.5 beers a day.
Wow.
Per capita. And it was just like, I know tons of people who there's just this one old guy in the corner.
You're in America, that's binge drinking 5 a day.
I think it's come way down. I know they're no longer in the top 10. Yeah, that was, yeah, I was there in the early 90s. So a little bit of time has passed. Look, I'm going to try and come back because we've gone all over and this has now just become a really cool, interesting conversation. You've defined this as kind of living the life you want, having the people you want to work with and the audience that you want to work for, because I do love your videos because you guys are having fun. I just can't grow anything on the side of my face. Get a good goatee, but that's about it. As you look to this, how are you trying to figure out what success is going to be as an entrepreneur? Not for the company. You know, you're talking about possibly moving, creating this environment. What's going to be this entrepreneurial success for you?
Yeah, I'm still not there. I have the fortune of being pretty incompetent, which means it takes me a really long time to figure things out. So I'm still like trying to figure things out and get things set up. But one of my goals has always been to have a business that I can step away from and it grows without me. So right now I have a business that I can step away from and it will do fine without me. Everything's going to run. You know, there's no fires, yeah. But it's not quite at the point where it can scale and grow without, you know, my hand holding or whatever. So that's kind of like the next step in the business. This has been an interesting year because 2023 for us was an incredibly challenging year. We were down like 40%. We had some pricing issues. Our first year in our history that we lost money. And, yeah. You know, my business partner, she had her third kid in like about 5 years. And, you know, the stress was getting to her. The stress was certainly getting to me. And she stepped away from the business. She was in the operations role. So I took on the operations role and the marketing role. So it's like kind of my first time running the company, both ops and marketing, and being able to figure out what that is and like rolling out my style of management for the ops team and hopefully seeing some success. We're doing some pretty significant overhaul to our business in terms of like the 3PL that we work with, the manufacturers that we work with, and the products that we're launching, how we're launching them, how we're distributing our products. So, you know, working through those is a really fun thing for me in the short term. And then in the long term, it's like, it's been nice to watch my team rise up. And then hopefully, you know, this is something that they can continue to rise up on. And, you know, eventually I'd like to see some kind of like strategy skills emerge from someone at Beard Brand that maybe can start to take that over for me.
Yeah.
And once that happens, I have like other businesses that I want to launch, like other. So we consider Beard Brand in the men's grooming space. So if you're a dude, I've got products for you, shampoo, soaps, deodorants. I would like to develop a product for the women. So women call it the beauty space or the skincare space. So I have a product line for that I'd like to develop. In addition to some pretty unique products. So like, I'm still driven to make products, make things, make businesses.
Yeah.
And I'm a 0 to 1 kind of guy. I'm not a 1 to 10 guy, which is also very challenging. So that's why I'm really looking forward to like finding those team. I think like what gets us, you know, I'm like you, we've gotten close to that 8-figure mark.
Yeah.
But we've never passed it. And I think the thing that's limiting is like, I need the team that are that 1 to 10 kind of team people that are good with KPIs and accountability, and they're good, but like, I still think like that's the key element. And I right now I'm patient because I think my team is that they just need the time to grow. So I'm okay. Like kind of taking a slower, ooh, this is one of the nice things with like, you know, the quote unquote lifestyle business is like, I'm okay with like the longer, slower pathway to be able to develop team members who I really love and enjoy, and I just love working with them, that I can not rush them into a role that they're not quite ready for. And I think that,
well,
as an entrepreneur, or at least I'll speak for myself in my past self, is like, I've had very high expectations for team members to be hitting these high level performance things in a very short period of time, which is not realistic, to be fair to them.
You learn the hard way. You may be willing to kill yourself, but you've also spent all this time understanding it. So your ability to look at something new, you've already built the framework in place of how it impacts or how it could, versus someone who's kind of coming in. You're like, why can't you just Google and figure it out? It's like, well, first they have to understand what you want them to figure out, not just the tactical, but like what framework and all that. Yeah, that's a tough one. But are you, is everyone in Austin? Are you global talent mix and match?
Yeah. So what happened is, of course, with the government lockdowns, you know, we went to primarily remote.
Yeah.
And then I had I would say I had about four or five, maybe six team members who came in regular to the Beard Brand office. And then one of those was my business partner. So she's out. And then two of them, you know, moved to a different city. So it's effectively like we're down to like three people who come in to the Beard Brand office. Yeah. We've just made it official. We're a work remote company now. So I still have this office I'm trying to get out of. If anyone listening is here in Austin and you want to,
in Austin,
if you want an office, come hit me up and maybe you can take over my lease. But yeah, so that's the goal, is to continue doing that. I do have my video editor in the Philippines, and I do have one of my YouTube content creators is in the UK or in Bournemouth, UK. So we're quasi global. But primarily in America is our primary stuff.
What's the best way people can check you out? Your Twitter, LinkedIn. What's the best way if someone wants to learn more
it's
about
X now,
what
man.
You're doing?
Yeah, check out my X. My X.
Oh, X, yes. I just, you know, bend holes.
No, I still call it Twitter. But Twitter is my most active platform. It's my last name, at Bandholz, BANDHOLZ. And I don't always talk about business stuff on there. I just kind of talk about the things I like talking about. And if you don't like that, you don't have to follow me. That's fine. But I would recommend that you head over to beardbrand.com. If you're a dude, I got products for you. Shampoo, conditioner, oils if you have a beard. You know, so we'll have you looking good, smelling good. Brushes, tools, scissors, combs, everything like that. Head over to Beard Brand and you can see how we do it. We do it pretty good.
Yeah, I was really impressed. I really do like it. And I'll make sure I have all the links from that. I mean, one last thing I had noticed, you had a great call out, and I wasn't quite sure if it was a joke or serious, because it is in this weird point where it could be a joke and it could be serious. Was it with AI you were talking about? If someone, if you know me and you hear me on a voice, make sure it's me.
No, it's dead serious. Like I called my parents yesterday and I'm like, listen, because they're getting older. And I'm like, listen, if I ever call you asking for money, it's probably not me. Just hang up and call me back and like verify. Yeah. Like I will not get mad at you if you hang up on me. Like that's fine. So like I have so much content of me out there that people are going to be able to escape. You know, like I guess I should have mentioned I have a podcast.
Yeah.
I have a podcast as well, e-commerce conversations. Yeah. But like, yeah, so my voice can be completely duplicated. And it's kind of terrifying, especially with like aging parents who, you know, are at a higher risk for getting scammed.
Yeah. I mean, I was amazed. I used to think, you know, like recently my team trained a script on my voice and they didn't even need me. You know, it's like I tried a year and a half ago and you had to read the scripts and you had to do all that. Now it's just like, oh yeah, we just played a, you know, clip of you talking and it was able to, you know, recreate your voice. So anytime you say too much, we're going to
it knows, man. It knows. It's like, it's crazy, man. It's crazy times that we're living in. And like, I can kind of see where it's going in the next 5 to 10 years. But like, I don't think the majority of people around the world understand like what these like they will be Android robots in your house doing your dishes, cleaning up around. And it will, your brain is going to be mind fucked to like this interaction that you have with an inanimate object. Like it's going to be weird times. Like if the internet screwed up people and social media screwed up people, like this AI stuff is going to really mess with people's minds.
Yeah. And we, the best,
but bring it on. I love it.
It's overused. Yeah, I know. It's like, it's going to be the best of times and the worst of times. Yeah. Sorry, as I keep losing my voice here, but yeah, I mean, it really is like, and I think you have to be involved in doing something now, because if you're not surfing this change, it's going to be like, can I just have, please, sir, may I have another? It's,
yeah. You're going to be like your grandparents who couldn't figure out Windows 95. Like,
yeah.
You have to continuously be learning. And I understand how it comes. It's like, man, I like my fax machine. It's like, now we're doing emails now. Like, you better get with it. So like AI is like, we're doing AI now. Like, you better learn it.
Funny you said that. I just met someone who, private equity firm, has the dial up for AOL. And it's still like a $20 million a year business. Just people never gave up the dial up for AOL. I'm just like, that makes so much sense that there's, you know, and he's like, yeah, it's declining 15% year over year, but you know, we bought it on this, you know, with an indication that it would decline even faster. We've been surprised. AI is going to make all of our lives interesting. All right, Eric, this has been one of the least focused interviews I've ever done. So everyone, I do apologize, but Eric's a really cool guy. And I think, you know, just what he's looking at and your ability to kind of create the life you're thinking about from being an entrepreneur is so important. I think it is sort of the reason we do this. Every other sort of lifestyle other than maybe artists and a few others, you're kind of beholden to so many other structures that are not in your control. And as Eric is showing, an entrepreneur, you can kind of create everything
the way you want.
And it's cool. It's fun. So everyone, go check him out. Go, if you have a beard or you are buying for someone who has a beard.
Or if you're a dude, no beard dude. Required. I got products for you.
All right, get some good hair stuff. But no, thank you, Eric, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
All right, everyone. This was an interesting wandering conversation. Go check out Eric's stuff. But yeah, please, if you know anyone who's thinking about moving abroad as an entrepreneur or just, you know, trying to figure out these questions, send this episode. I think they'll get a kick out of it, and I'll greatly appreciate it. All right, everyone, have a wonderful day. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.